What I found in Wick's apartment. Trust, though, required certain betrayals. Long before the arrival of Bourne, I had searched Wick's quarters while he was out selling his drugs. I assumed he had done the same to me, but who knew? This aspect of trust you don't talk about with the recipient. My betrayal required skill, to unpuzzle locks, to bypass traps, to snuff optics. But in the end, it wasn't worth the effort. Wick's three rooms did not reveal much about the man. The sum of his existence in that cramped space came to so very little. No family photographs or portraits, few personal items. Perhaps, I thought, he chose to live so small to keep whatever secrets he hid out of his mind? I imagined that somewhere buried deep in our balcony cliff's midden lay a warehouse full of artifacts Wick kept locked away so he could not be compromised by them. But if that was true, I never found that place. I had only the stark evidence at hand. Coerced gently from a desk drawer with a little creative lockpicking, a diagram of a fish curled inside the outer tube of a broken telescope, and a metal box filled with tiny vermilion nautilus shells, curled up and dry. I pocketed one nautilus shell for later, examined the fish diagram. I held the diagram unfolded beneath the dim light of the fireflies Wick had embedded in the ceiling. I knew it was a relic from Wick's final project at the company, the one he would only talk about when he was drunk. Certainly nothing like this had ever arisen from Wick's makeshift swimming pool vat. Yet. Whatever purpose the schematic had served, in the end it depicted an ugly fish, like a huge grouper or carp. A sideways cutaway view, with lines radiating out from the brain, but also other parts, with numbers and random letters at the end of the spikes. That the fish had a wistful face of a woman with pale skin and blue eyes did not help, the effect ghoulish. It made me wary, as if some mad scientist had decided to make real a figurehead from an old sailing ship. Wariness was not the term for the scrawling on the back. The more recent notes around the edges I could tell were in Wick's handwriting and amounted to nostalgia. Little nudges about how he might recreate the fish project, which had clearly petered out over time. But there was also a second writer, dominating the center space with what looked like older marks, whose clear passion had increased into madness. The handwriting devolved into sweeping or stabbing marks, less and less legible, and then became gouged dark clouds of scribbles. The damage obscured meaning or told me too much, and what words that did peer through the mess were less than useful. Near the end of legibility, the scrawled words, "No more company." I put the empty telescope on the bed, continued my rummaging, worried Wick might catch me in the act. But I quickly realized there was nothing left to riffle through. So some scavenger's sixth sense made me return to the telescope. A patina like mother of pearl covered the surface. I held the telescope up to the firefly lights to admire it, then frowned. Something seemed etched on the surface. In fact, up close, the metal surface revealed itself as hundreds of tiny, hard fish scales, forming a pattern so integrated you almost couldn't see the joins. The surface was still silver shiny, blank, but when I adjusted my grip, I discovered that the heat of my fingers had done something to the scales. Miniature photographs had formed there. Sneaky, sneaky Wick. Although I couldn't understand the purpose of concealment, the photographs appeared to date from before the city's ruination, reproduced from old books, but hardly seemed worth keeping secret. Curious, I made quick work of the telescope's surface, heating up every scale with my touch, almost as if playing a musical instrument, and then squinting at the results. Most that weren't photographs of places now destroyed held a record of impressions of the city. There were lists of places under titles like Reclaim and Asked Answers like How Do You Kill a Building? Do Nothing. Some of it appeared to be the equivalent of microfiche, containing a rich history of the city before the company's appearance. Other fragments were so microscopic I could only guess at their importance and wondered how Wick could read them. Unless he had some viewing device hidden away, too. None of this seemed like the Wick I knew, who was a loner, who had never mentioned the city as it had existed before the company, and who seemed to have blocked the hope of any future for the city from his mind. But I finally understood the need for secrecy when I realized it wasn't just old photographs and older data. Some scales held monstrous visions of projects never completed that scared me because they made Mord seem mundane. Most important, other scales included a fair number of technical specifications for biotech that I knew Wick had created. None of our enemies needed that information. Sometimes I wondered whether I would still find Wick fascinating if I uncovered all of his secrets, if I would even know who he was without them. Back in my apartment, I dropped the Nautilus I had stolen into a glass of water and watched as it reanimated, turned a brilliant shade of crimson, began to uncoil as it stared at me, almost defiant, and then disintegrated into nothing, as if it had never existed. A disappearing trick. An illusion. Drinking that elixir of Wick mysteries was impossible for me. I poured the water out, cleaned the glass, tossed the glass onto a pile of dirty old clothes out in the corridor. My other betrayal was simple. I liked Bourne too much. I knew this in my bones. Knew I really should give him up, but I also knew it would take something catastrophic for me to do so. The more personality Bourne showed, the more I felt attached to him. Bourne also made it easy to keep him because I discovered he would eat just about anything, any crumb, lowly pebble, or scrap of wood. Any worm of any description that came within reach would disappear, never to be seen again. Bourne ate a lot of what I would have discarded as trash, and in a sense, made a compost pile redundant. I think he would have eaten a garbage can if he'd been hungry enough. This ease of life with Bourne didn't stop him from continuing to puzzle me. The most basic and troubling puzzle? Even though so much went into Bourne, nothing ever came out of Bourne. This fact struck me as absurd, even humorously sinister. It actually made me giggle. No pellets, no dung, no little puddles, nothing. Bourne was also growing. Yes, growing. I hadn't wanted to admit it at first, because the idea of growth carried with it the idea of a more radical change, the thought of a child becoming an adult. In how many species did the transformation become radical, the parent so different from the juvenile? So yes, by the end of the first month, although the process had been gradual, I could no longer deny that Bourne had tripled in size. I also could not deny that I was actively hiding Bourne from Wick. I no longer let Wick into my apartment. Or if I did, I made sure to put Bourne in the back room, out of sight. I ignored Wick's attempts to engage me on the subject of Bourne as a threat or a creature that required caution. Since Bourne never displayed any kind of threatening behavior, I never thought to take him as a threat. Even calling Bourne a he began to feel faintly ridiculous, as he didn't exhibit the aggression or self-absorption I expected from most males. Instead, during those early days, Born had become a blank slate on which I had decided to write only useful words.